This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Since the beginning of the pandemic, researchers have known that white-tailed deer could be infected with COVID-19. According to research from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 40% of deer across parts of the Midwest and Northeast are testing positive for COVID-19 antibodies. The deer dwell in both urban backyards and rural homesteads, and they travel quickly, and they're essentially everywhere in the country. As a species, they're pretty far from being contained or containable. And though there is no evidence for it yet, it's possible that the virus using deer as a reservoir could be transmitted from deer back to humans. Joining us now to discuss a species that's worse at social distancing than our own is Dr. Becky Smith. She's an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. She's also a health innovation professor at Carl Illinois College of Medicine. Dr. Smith, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Also with us is Dr. Eric Schauber, principal research scientist, Illinois state biologist, and director at the Illinois Natural History Survey, which is part of the Prairie Research Institute, also at the University of Illinois Urbana. Dr. Schauber, welcome to the 21st to you as well.
Hello, Brian. Very happy to be here.
Listeners, we want to invite you to join the conversation. Also, if you are concerned about the transmission of COVID through animals, maybe you work with or live around or hunt deer, what questions do you have for experts in the field of animal biology and epidemiology? Give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So, Dr. Smith, I want to begin with you. I want to go back to 2020. From the beginning of the pandemic, experts were aware that a virus like COVID that emerged from animals could spread back to animals. What did we know then? What's changed? What have we learned in the past couple of years?
So we suspected from the beginning that COVID-19, of course, was a zoonotic spillover, is what we would call, which means that it came from animals into people. And there is always a risk, especially with coronaviruses. They do like to infect a lot of different species. There was always the risk that they might get into other species. At this point, the USDA has identified 16 different species of animals that have been infected in the US. 14 of those are companion animals or zoo animals. So only minks, which is a farmed livestock animal, and white-tailed deer, which is wildlife, have been infected outside of those who are in constant contact with people. But we have noticed that white-tailed deer across the U.S., wherever we've looked for it, we've found COVID-19 in the white-tailed deer.
Interesting. So Dr. Schauber, how you were part of the study finding the first evidence of COVID-19 in Illinois deer, as I understand it. What is it about deer specifically that make them good hosts for the virus?
Sure. Just to correct, I was not part of that study.
My bad.
So deer, as you indicated earlier, are pretty social. And they're pretty abundant. So those are two things that lead to conditions that make it easy for infectious germs, viruses, bacteria to pass from animal to animal. They have a pretty tight social structure where does and their fawns and even their older offspring will hang out together. They spend a lot of time nose to nose feeding next to each other in the kind of conditions that can easily lead to disease spread. And as you also indicated, they do occasionally move long distances. I've been part of research that has documented them moving, up to 60 miles across the landscape. And so that means they can, carry pathogens like viruses, a long ways from where they might have initially encountered them. And then finally, another thing you noted is that they are in environments where they often are at least casually interacting with people. People see them in their backyards, people hunt them, people miss and sometimes fail to miss them with their cars. Also there are captive facilities where people raise different species of deer, and that provides another possible means by which pathogens like viruses can be passed between humans and deer, including the wild deer, because captive deer sometimes encounter and interact with wild deer across fences.
Well, that's what I wanted to, one thing I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Schauber, which is how do we think, if we, you know, we may, I'm assume we don't have, you know, it on video footage or anything, but mm-hmm. how humans first transmitted the virus to deer, because I, you know, I think about my own experience, there are deer in my neighborhood, but they have no problem maintaining a social distance of well more than 6 feet from me and other humans.
Right. It's not often that we're breathing the same air, you know, that a deer has been breathing, seconds before. But there's ways that the viruses could kind of pass in a stepping stone kind of manner. We do know that people can give COVID virus to their domestic animals, cats and dogs. And some of those roam around outside. And those might be instances where they might have a closer encounter with wild deer than people might. As I indicated, that captive deer facilities might be another possibility where the virus could go from human to a captive deer, and then from there to a wild deer. And then, depending on what happens in the wild population, virus could be transferred back the opposite direction along the same chain. We really don't know. This is all very speculative at this point, but those seem the kind of scenarios that seem most likely.
And Brian, if I can add, there Please. Was a recent study from Texas A&M that found evidence of transmission from a human to a captive deer herd. They found that a captive deer herd was highly infected, and they traced it back to a person who was handling the deer for a study who was infected. So we don't know for sure that it got into wild deer from that captive herd, but we do know that that transmission can happen with those captive herds.
Interesting. So, Dr. Smith, I understand white deer are known as a black box for the virus. What does that mean? Why is that potentially worrisome?
Well, we don't know if it is possible for the deer to transmit back to people. As you mentioned earlier, that there is no evidence that they have done so yet. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is watching this closely. They're monitoring the data, the raw data, on a regular basis, and they will let us know if they find any signal. But there is not yet evidence that white-tailed deer are able to transmit back to people. We are still gathering information. There are people doing studies where they infect the deer and see what their viral loads are, what kind of virus they're transmitting to each other. But this is still early days of understanding how the viral dynamics work in those white-tailed deer.
Dr. Schauber, I mean, is there a concern that deer could become a reservoir for the virus? And maybe we should just back up and explain what that would mean in scientific terms.
Sure. Becky pointed out that the initial study, for example, showed that there were antibodies in deer. And that led to questions of, does this mean that they're actually able to support this disease? In other words, spread it from animal to animal at a high enough rate that it can actually be perpetuated within the population. And then later studies have found active virus infections in deer that have clearly not had any particular contact with people. So I think we know at this point that deer are able to, what we call, amplify. In other words, an infected deer is likely to spread and infect more than one other animal. Now, for it to be a reservoir, what we would need to show is that the virus is able to perpetuate within that wild population more or less indefinitely. And that's something we haven't particularly documented yet, but it's certainly something that is a concern. For that to be the case, you know, it would need to be continued transmission, not just in an initial epizootic, which is sort of the animal term of an epidemic, wave passing through. So with the USDA and other entities doing surveillance, we'll hopefully get a better idea of to what degree this population can sustain that as a naturally occurring infection in the population.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. We're speaking with Dr. Eric Schauber, who's the Illinois State Biologist, part of the Natural History Survey and the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Dr. Becky Smith, who's an Associate Professor of Epidemiology at University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, also a health innovation professor at Carl Illinois College of Medicine. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation. If you have concerns about deer and COVID-19 or just questions about it, 800-222-9455 is the number to call. That's 800-222-9455. So, Dr. Smith, you mentioned deer and I think it was mink were the only sort of wild animals that have been documented to be infected with COVID-19. Do you have a sense of what makes an animal more susceptible to infection? Why it's just these two wild species so far?
So that gets well beyond my expertise. Okay. That gets into the immunology of the system. There is something to do with receptors that the virus can bind to, but there are certain animals that are more or less susceptible. For instance, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has done surveillance among many, many, many raccoons, and they have yet to find COVID-19 in a raccoon. So there are some species that are able to be infected and others that aren't, and we're still looking at which of those species there might be. But white-tailed deer was identified early on by the immunologists as a species of risk because their receptors resemble the receptors that the virus uses.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-222-9455. Paul is on line one from Urbana. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, because of the history of hunters, which would be most likely the vector from deers to human of wasting illness, which is all over Wisconsin, I'm sure Illinois and other Midwestern hunters are aware of it. Do they exercise protocols that would, you know, lessen the possibility of transmission?
Go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Paul. Our time is tight. So, Dr. Schauber, I wonder if you have a perspective on that, hunters as a potential vector of transmission, and what sort of safety protocols they might consider.
Sure. We definitely recommend hunters take precautions like wearing gloves, you know, cleaning, any implements that are used in caring for, in gutting or butchering an animal, and cooking the meat to a recommended temperature. All of that is likely to make the risk of spread pretty small. We know this is, it seems likely this is what transmission chances are going to happen are, again, through respiratory kinds of contact. And that's not something that is likely to happen with a hunter processing a deer. So the same sorts of precautions that I think most hunters typically use are likely to be effective here. And again, we have no particular evidence that there's been any transmission back to humans, which given the number of deer that are taken by hunters every year and the fact that we know that it is prevalent in the deer population, again, that it seems that risk is pretty low.
Okay. I think we can squeeze one more call in if he's quick. Mike is calling from Springfield on line four. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, I was just wondering, with the observed cases of COVID-19 in white-tailed deer, are they symptomatic or asymptomatic, or do they run the gamut like they do in humans from asymptomatic to horribly lethal?
Okay, good question, Mike. Thanks so much. Dr. Smith, I wonder if you have a perspective on that.
As far as I know, I don't think we have seen any symptoms in deer. They don't seem to be affected by it. Dr. Schauber might need to correct me on that.
The indications I've seen are that there have been some cases of mild respiratory symptoms, but there have not been any documented serious symptoms or illness in deer that have been affected.
Okay. Well, this is an issue we're going to continue to keep an eye on. I want to thank Dr. Eric Schauber, who's Illinois State Biologist and Director at the Illinois Natural History Survey, part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois Urbana, and Dr. Becky Smith, Professor of Epidemiology at the College of Veterinary Medicine at U of I Urbana. Dr. Smith, Dr. Schauber, thanks so much for being with us to share your expertise today on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian.
Absolutely. This is fantastic. Thanks.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Erica Scalise, who's also our engagement producer. Our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brio Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Before we go, I want to urge you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. There you can find links to our Twitter page, our Facebook, every other way to contact us, our voicemail. You can send us an email or follow our social media links. It's all on our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find a link to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss a conversation. We're also on Apple Podcasts, NPR One, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Just search for The 21st, The 21ST. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.